rubbish. The video podcast was much better, and I always looked forward to it. It was short, sweet, and informative. They actually showed footage of the games, which was nice. Not to be rude, but I think the only thing that would improve the audio podcast is to stop making it. Or at least produce it under a different feed so that we can subscribe to the video podcast without having this one thrust upon us. The sound quality was poor, with people of various volumes. One chappy could hardly be heard. I think that may have been you. I didn't actually listen to it long enough to get into any details, because it started off with incomprehensible gibberish, with what sounded like a couple of guys messing around whilst recording themselves on a drunken Friday night. Dreadful. First impressions and all that. The video podcast, on the other hand, is professionally done and a complete joy. Something I really look forward to. Nez, 21st of May, 2009.
I must agree with those who feel that the audio podcast are not working. The video podcasts are better because we are able to see the games. Everything is professional and just well put together. I would like it very much if you would go back to video podcast. L, 22nd of May, 2009.
STP tried to do this as well. I listened to about 10 minutes of their audio podcast and deleted it. That's why I didn't even download PG's audio podcast. I love you guys and all, but I'm not going to listen to PG guys talk about iPhone games for an hour. Either scrap the idea, or like Nez said, put out a video and audio podcast. Tim. Cloud, 22nd of May, 2009.
And there we have it. So welcome once again to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. I'm the host and editor of the site, Rob Hearn. With me, the managing director of the site, Chris James.
Hello.
And also the community editor and German editor, Fraser McInnes.
Hello. Guten Tag.
Welcome. Guten Tag. great. So yeah, as you may have heard, we were just reading out some... the most positive comments we got regarding last week's podcast, so hopefully we'll be able to kind of improve on what we gave you last week with some more wretched nonsense. The first piece of wretched nonsense we're going to talk about is the news that Capcom is bringing some of its franchises to iPhone, amongst them possibly Street Fighter, although that's, of course, search engine-friendly speculation. But it has already brought us Resident Evil Degeneration. So what do you guys think? Do you think Street Fighter is likely on the iPhone? Fraser.
Yes, I do. I do think it's likely. And full-heartedly? That doesn't really work very well.
Does that's it? Exactly it.
Wholeheartedly.
Wholeheartedly? Yeah, either way, one of those ways, Lays. I'm looking forward to it, which is probably not a good thing, because I'm not exactly sure how the iPhone's control interface is going to handle something like Street Fighter.
I had this conversation with Spanner earlier. How's it gonna work? It's got an 8-way directional pad and 6 different buttons. So how do they all...
Unless they just completely simplified it and just basically assigned touch-sensitive parts of the screen... Which is the whole... Okay, the whole screen is touch-sensitive. What I'm trying to say is if they ascribe buttons on the bottom of the screen to each individual move, so there's a button for an uppercut, and a button for a dragon punch, and a button for a spin kick, and all these sorts of things, which would diminish the challenge a bit, but it would certainly sidestep having to fiddle around with all the fiddly button inputs that we all contorted our joints on back in the 90s on joypads.
Yeah. And recently with Street Fighter 4, of course.
I think they can do it on iPhone. I think I'm really looking forward to it. Actually, I'm a big Street Fighter fan. I even didn't hate it just when it came on mobile, despite it being a bit dumbed down. I think it could be really cool. I think you could reinvent it with doing little gestures for special moves, and people have got little controllers working on. Real Football did a really good job of getting the controller working. There's quite a few kind of virtual D-pads. I know a lot of people hate it, but it worked quite well. And I think they could do that. And they could make the special moves, do some little squiggly thing with your finger, and Ryu does a dragon punch or that sort of stuff. I think it'd be great.
If they use kind of like the Cell Weaver type thing that that THQ used with the Star Wars game. I thought, yeah, that might work for certain kind of special moves and things like that. But yeah, I think it would have to be simplified a bit, because even though with real football, that does work quite well. You don't need to make as sudden and as abrupt movements. I mean, fighting games, it's a real precision art to play those well. And actually, I mean, with a lot of games, one of the criticisms that comes out is lack of responsiveness. So you'd have to get that just right.
There isn't a fighting game yet, is there? There's not a fighting game out. Or is there? A two on...
Not that I know of.
Not that I can think of either. No,
in fact, I do know there is one. Having said that, there is one that was a free game. It wasn't very good, though. I can't remember the name of it now. Damn. Read us to... listen to this first challenge for the listeners. Mail us in and let us know which are the fighting games on iPhone at the moment and if any of them is any good. And so we can see how bad Street Fighter could be on iPhone. I reckon it'd be good, though. I think the interesting thing about this is not just Street Fighter, it's the fact that the console publishers are finally, quite belatedly, it seems, even though iPhone's only been around for less than a year, really bringing their big guns out now. Because there's this whole thing about, are we going to bring big games? Are we going to wait until we get this premium price point? And then EA obviously waded in, and Capcom are. I think, you know, we're going to see Activisions and, Take-Two's. I wouldn't be surprised to see a version of GTA or that sort of thing kind of appearing here soon.
That would be awesome.
Floodgates are opening. You're here first. First rumour, then. GTA iPhone by the autumn.
Well, do you know what's interesting about that, actually? With Resident Evil Degeneration, it's the first game that Capcom's released from its actual console studio rather than its mobile arm. Like, the publisher on iTunes, when you look, is actually just Capcom, not Capcom Mobile, which it used to publish Mega Man or whatever its first iPhone title was. So it's the actual main studio that released that game. So it is definitely a case of the big studios bringing their big guns rather than passing the work off down to a smaller dev team and a subsidiary company.
Well, maybe it's because... Yeah, maybe previously they were just porting the mobile versions, and that's why Capcom Mobile, so it was literally a version of the mobile version rather than a... But that's interesting. No, good spot there.
Yeah.
Why haven't we written a feature about this? Where's the feature? About
that's some good investigative journalism.
If that is, why don't we do that on every day? That'd be useful, right?
That's
anyway,
what the podcast's for. I can sum up a whole feature in three sentences on a podcast. It would take me hours if I had to write it down.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. It's been a good week for Apple PR, I think. Not that they've had any really bad weeks recently in the last year. But just today, on PocketGamer.biz, which is, of course, our sister site, Trip Hawkins said that Nintendo and Sony should be worried about the competition from iPhone. In the system, I haven't even put it live on their site yet, but we've got another developer, an independent developer, saying that it's all about iPhone, and he's saying mobile is dead. That's his opinion. Also on the front page of the site today, Satoru Iwata is on record as saying that he likes the iPhone and that he thinks it's great. And although he hasn't gone as far as to say he's nervous about it and that he thinks it's a competitor, he let Trip Hawkins do that for him. He's definitely kind of acknowledging its existence, and I think the people in Apple must be quite pleased by just in one day, in the course of one day, the amount of positive press that comes out about that.
Yeah.
They're really doing quite well.
I do find it quite frustrating the way the big hardware manufacturers have danced around the issue of iPhone. It's really kind of been a sort of sticking the fingers in the ears, going la 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 la, it doesn't exist, I can't see it, so it doesn't exist sort of approach to the iPhone, especially where Sony and Nintendo have been concerned over the past sort of 6 months, 6 to 9 months kind of thing. But
yeah, they will do that. I mean, it's natural for, I mean, Sony especially, they're completely delusional. They're like Chemical Alley sometimes. they're last year when the PS3 was in trouble, that some of the things they came out with were absolute hysterical. And you can imagine the same thing from Nintendo. It's just not done, is it, to kind of openly acknowledge fear.
But that's the thing that I thought today with it was great, obviously, that Iwata is so open about that today. With I think it was during a financial meeting with the company shareholders or something that this all came out. But it's the thing about it as well is that he still went to considerable lengths to make the point that it's still different demographics that are going to be buying an iPod Touch or a DSi or a DS Lite or whichever handheld Nintendo console people are going to opt for. And I really don't see that distinction at all, to be honest. I think if you are within the age group, let's say the age group between spanning Nintendo and iPhone spans from, I don't know, 15 to 50, then chances are, if you've got £150 in your pocket, you are considering both devices. You're not thinking, oh no, I'm definitely only going to get the DSi because it provides this specific thing that I want. Because ultimately, both consoles cannibalize one another's functions. So to still try and state, I think, that they're going after different demographics is a bit of a weak sort of... it's sort of damning the iPhone with faint praise a little bit, I think.
Yeah, but I think that's understandable. I mean, you know, they're not going to turn around and go, yes, it's a credible challenger to our monopoly, what's the cartel is what I was looking for. They don't want to give it any more kind of credence than it's already been given by the other publisher. And I think they're very keen to separate what they're doing from iPhone, from this kind of mobile, hybrid, little cheap digital games, because... You know, suddenly to see something that plays, I think that the closer they get, the more worrying it gets when you've got this massive audience, this massive sort of attachment rate, and this, you know, a model which sees games being sold at, you know, 59p or a couple of quid, compared to this, you know, box products of 20 quid, which aren't necessarily that much better, you know, in a lot of cases. And I think, I bet they are really scared. The fact that they are having to kind of damn it with faint praise and having to talk about it at all is quite. I think it shows how scared they are. The interesting thing is that you said, and that we've all said it now, when nobody's talking now about the iPhone being a mobile challenger or maybe it being a games thing. It's a console now. It's a console platform. That's just happened. There's no discussion anymore. It's like, you know, it's a platform. The publishers think it. We think it. You know. Nintendo and Sony obviously really do think it. It's done. It's amazing with
it is. I mean, I was in New York a couple of weeks ago, about 3 weeks ago even, and obviously it's a city that's just, I wish, obviously it's a city that's just plastered with billboards everywhere for every type of thing that you can possibly buy with money. And there was a fair few iPhone, in fact iPod Touch billboards there, and not one of them highlighted any features apart from gaming. Every single billboard was focused centrally on gaming and nothing else. It was, here's a picture of an iPod Touch playing a game layered on top of five other iPod Touches playing five other different games. That's the key selling point of that device now. Not music, not video, not the internet, not GPS, games. Mm. And that's really significant, I think.
Yeah, it's funny how that's happened. I really didn't think it was going to take off, incidentally. When it first kind of came about, the first iPhone game I ever saw, I won't say what it was, but it was in a developer's office, and he was kind of...
Say what it was.
No, I can't, because I'll get in trouble. Especially with this one. I'll tell you what it is later, but...
Was it GTA? Was it GTA?
I actually know exactly.
I think Chris was there, I think. so that's it. I kind of thought... Because all the complaints that people have had about mobile gaming over the years, about it being rubbish for controlling games and stuff. When you know, and they're definitely true, it's not designed for that. And when the iPod Touch and iPhone came out and, you know, the game started to come out, I was really sceptical, and I used to think, well, how can they be any better if they don't have any buttons whatsoever? You know, in the touchscreen games I played on mobile, I was never particularly impressed by, nor was I by the accelerometer games. That's the thing that struck me. I mean, obviously the success is striking, but it struck me that they managed to make games any good in the first place, because neither of those two technologies, the accelerometer control or the touchscreen, seemed to me before then to kind of really lend themselves to good games. So really, a lot of the credit has to go to the developers, who
Sure.
Well, in fact, all of it has to go to the developers, really. I mean, they're the ones who make the games that make the device popular.
It's almost exactly the same sort of reaction that I had to the Nintendo DS when it first came out as well, though. And a lot of other people were sort of like, "This, what is the, why do we need a touchscreen?" You know. And I must admit, although I was, I think probably just because of Apple's brand strength and its ability to just invade seemingly completely untapped territory. Basically, it creates genres. I mean, the iPod created an industry, you know, and I think that really that's essentially what they've done with iPod Touch and iPhone gaming. But moving back onto the point, I was skeptical as well that the touchscreen could be used in a way that serious gamers or people that like to play at least a lot of games would find compelling. But you're right, the developers have absolutely managed it. But the other thing that I was thinking as well there about the DS and DSi and whether or not they genuinely see the iPod or the iPhone, sorry, as a threat. DSiWare, I really don't think DSiWare would even have happened had it not been for the iPhone's business model in relation to games. I really don't think that Nintendo are keen to move away from the boxed retail model that they've been working with successfully for X amount of years. And that shows in their approach to DSiWare so far. It really has been a drip feed, and hopefully it's going to improve, but WiiWare and the Nintendo Channel and all that sort of, all those other Nintendo services have been equally slow to gather momentum, and I really don't know whether or not DSiWare is going to be able to match up to the App Store anytime soon. It's at least in terms of the sheer volume of decent content that you can get there.
It won't with volume, just because Nintendo is a lot more strict about, you know, what it allows on the service, and you have to pay money to get it.
It's not open to developers, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think they ever will. But the whole rationale behind that is so that Nintendo can have quality control. And one of the things that they said before DSiWare came about was that the thing that will make it different from the App Store and better than the App Store, obviously, in their opinion, was that it wouldn't just be a load of trash, which the App Store undoubtedly has on it. It would just be very few really good games. But they're not really. It doesn't have a very few really good games. It's got very few average or mediocre or
and some of them aren't even games. I mean, an Animal Crossing watch, that's pretty much throwaway content as far as I'm concerned. Exactly.
I love that. That sounds great. An Animal Crossing watch. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Maybe I've just got a cold, dead heart. But
I want that. I'm going to go on that game somewhere. I hadn't bothered before because it looked rubbish. But now you've really raised the bar. I think we're going to continue this a bit longer. But I think the thing is, the thing that you mentioned about quality control, that's quite interesting, isn't it? I mean, really, what is, you know, the same kind of thing that's happened with services like kind of Engage and a lot of other kind of closed shops where they, you know, we do it this way to keep it kind of quality control. See, similar to the extent with the PSP's kind of and Sony's kind of digital services, but that doesn't, you know, that's proven. I think that's kind of 1.0 thinking, isn't it? I mean, that's not the way, like, the web, for instance, works. It's not quality control. That's you know how AOL used to work, but you know that's model is not how media and anything works anymore. So why should it work that way, you know, necessarily with kind of games anymore and that sort of distribution? Why should you have one person go, no, I know what everybody wants, and I'm going to make the decisions, and I'm going to make it very difficult for other people to get into this.
It's a very corporate way of seeing it. It's like, it's complete corporate mentality, which doesn't really work. And in mainstream gaming, you can see Valve's success is pretty much entirely built on the fact that it engages with its community of people who kind of made maps for the games, and it hires a lot of people who used to make mods for the game and things like that, and it you know, it's got a more democratic approach. It understands that these are the people, the gamers are the people who really know what they're doing, and so they make the best games. And if you just leave it to if you leave the whole system to kind of run automatically of its own volition, then good content will kind of get noticed and float to the top. Whereas Nintendo still has this it's kind of stuck in this kind of retail model where it's just about what games get into the shops, and it's afraid of making the mistakes that Atari made and scaring everyone away from the industry with Drek. So it.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, then you look at that, and we've got to stop this thing because it's become very dusty chat. But you look at what DS games are in the shops. Are just, you know, there's a lot of virtual horses and quite frankly, drivel. Real awful, rip-offs of other games. Really ripped off, quickly chucked out versions of games on the consoles. There's a lot of
Hedgehog.
Exactly. There's a lot of nonsense. And there's no, where's the quality control there? There really isn't any. It's just atrocious.
Yeah.
There's nothing that anyone at Nintendo could say that's going to make me want to pay 15 quid for a puzzle game that I can buy on the App Store for 59 pence that's as good. You know, that's the thing. And there are so many of those puzzle games which, for 15 quid, they are dross. For 15 quid, they are a rip-off and they are just a waste of shelf space, in my opinion. But on the App Store, where they're almost, not to call them throwaway sounds negative, but they're something that you can consume. That they are this, they're that golden soundbite that everyone's been going after, but not quite achieving for ages. They are bite size, and you can literally pay a tiny amount of money, enjoy it for enough time to feel like that money was worth it, and then forget about it. But I would need to enjoy a £15 puzzle game for quite a while to feel like it was worth 15 quid. Maybe I'm just being a bit tight-fisted.
No, you're right. It's a rip.
You are Scottish, that's fine.
I walked right into racism.
It's okay.
We had a fight before we came on there, and now we had racism. This is the cutting edge. Bleeding edge of
that kind of racism's okay.
Is it?
English right. versus Scottish. Well, it's certainly okay, Scottish versus English. That was my experience of living in Scotland, so it's got to be okay the other way around.
Yeah. I'm surrounded.
I'm the bridge. I'm one half of each. But we were talking. Actually, I wanted to say something amusing about the Joystick podcast, but I'm not going to now because your talk about prices is kind of nicely onto the next news item, which is the two games this week have gone down to 59 pence. Carjack Street being one. And what's the other one? Oh, Crawl is the other one. Both of which were kind of quite fancy schmancy games. You know, they're not the kind of games that you normally expect to be 59 pence.
Can I interject there for a second? I think more than two games have gone down to 59 pence.
Yeah.
If we're going to be correct. I think maybe that's just two of maybe 1,000 games that have gone down to 59 pence.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But what you're saying, if I may correct you from the post, is that two very good games or, you know, high profile games have gone down.
Yeah.
You can go on now. You can continue with your point. I think I've made my pedantic point very clear now, so you go.
I don't have anything else to add to that, really. I got to the end, and then you... It's like you did something kind of distracting right at the end of 100-meter sprint. So the athlete, that's me, doesn't get the proper credit for winning the race.
Was it? I could have distracted you with throwing a javelin and you stuck it in your foot or something.
Ooh. Right. Oh, actually, Hysteria Project. No, but you're right to draw my attention to the variety of games that are 59p, because Hysteria Project is another formerly relatively expensive game that's come down to 59 pence.
Do you know what's interesting about all three of those games is that every single one of those divided opinion with our commenters on Pocket Gamer about good and bad, and they're all games that the developers have chosen to try at a lower price point. Is the Carjack Street one, isn't that just a weekend-long thing or something, or is that a permanent price drop?
No, it's the street till the end of the bank holiday
weekend,
I think. Okay.
So Crawl, Carjack Streets, and what's the Hysteria?
All those
got pretty mixed reviews, didn't they? I mean, I'm thinking if there's any... I'm trying to tie in something with those, apart from being games. What do we gave Carjack 7, 6?
We gave it 7, but the community seemed to think, well, certain outspoken members of the community seemed to think that it was worth 10. Of course it was worth 10, he said. No, the same with Hysteria Project. We gave it a reasonably low mark, and there was a bit of consternation about that. I can't remember exactly how it worked out with Crawl. I think Crawl was a bit of a victim of its own hype, in that people expected it to be a bit better than it actually turned out being. And then it was...
I think it was the other way around with Scroll. I think we gave it a higher mark.
We gave it a high mark, yeah.
We gave it an 8, and I think a lot of people felt that it deserved less.
Right, okay, okay.
So there's a correlation between people disagreeing with our scores and games going down in price. If you look at the tenuous link, that's what's going on here. Yeah. Interesting, I mean, so 59p, three games which mixed, but them being at 59p, being that we gave them middling scores or we cross case, I think we might have, it was one of the earlier games out, wasn't it? It was really beautiful, but it was very short. I remember that we kind of looked back and I thought, oh, you know, because it was so early, we didn't know what to expect, where the standard was. But do we think at 59p, you know, that those games are all worth a go, being that they were £3 before, is it?
Well, it's funny because I actually went and downloaded Crawl. So, yeah, certainly in my case. I think it does attract you to it. And I considered buying Carjack Streets, and I considered buying Hysteria Project, and, you know, and very possibly I'll buy both.
You should buy Hysteria Project. It's brilliant.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, don't disagree with their own scores.
Oh,
no,
sorry. I already did in the comments, but that's okay. So did Spanner, so I'm not alone.
So you're the consternation of the comments is you. Is
yeah, it was me. It was me. I just saw one of the other commenters disagreed, so I just seized the opportunity and jumped in. But it's a game that across the board has actually divided people pretty much everywhere, not just on our site, so... It's definitely, you know, different strokes for different folks kind of a thing. But I think it's a cracking wee title.
Yeah, so I thought about it. Played... 59p, that's... Because what the position I always put myself in when I'm looking through the App Store on my iPod Touch and I see a game that I vaguely want for 59p is, I think, well, that's... You compare it to the cost of other things. And 59p these days is about the price of a packet of Mars Planets or Maltesers or something like that. And you think, well, I wouldn't really hesitate.
Can we not mention brand names, please? I mean, we don't give free advertising here.
We don't, no, yeah.
That deal with M&M's as well, where you're not supposed to...
It's not illegal. It's just the BBC has these Reithian ideals about not giving any brands due prominence, but there's no illegal...
I agree with
other chocolate-based planet-themed snacks are available.
Are available, yeah. And it's just such a negligible... You know, if I ever hesitate to buy... A generic sweet product. then it's not because of the cost. It's all. I never think. Oh, I don't want to spend that much money on that. Sometimes I think I won't buy that because it'll make me fat. But I never. With a game, if I ever find myself hesitating over 59p for a game, I just slap myself and think, just download it. I mean, what?
Yeah, almost anything is worth 59p in the realm of gaming. You know,
that's an interesting point. But then there is time, isn't there? Like, there's more. You wouldn't download every 59p or every free app on the App Store just because it was cheap or free.
No.
Because, you know, there is time, is a, you know, it's all ticking away. It is a resource at which time is money and all that. So, I don't know. It's interesting. So, you've made a case for Hysteria. So, for 59p, the game podcast panel, Fraser goes, go for Hysteria. Rob seems to say go for Crawl, as he's already gone for it. I'm actually quite tempted. I didn't read the story there, so I'm actually now quite tempted to give Carjack Streets a go. So I quite liked it on mobile, and I quite liked it for 59p. So I think conclusively, that's worked for us. So it should be interesting if we see those in the top apps next week.
Yeah. Well, there was actually quite a reasonably long discussion thread erupted about this in the forums. People just talking about... having just missed price cuts and being pissed off that they'd spent £2.99 on a game that suddenly was reduced to £1.19 or even in some cases down to 59p, which is obviously quite annoying, and there's not really any easy solution to it. I suppose the saving grace of the App Store is that there is so much content available that's clearly very good value for money that you just got to roll with the punches with these things a little bit and accept that that might happen from time to time. But one of the really interesting points that came about in the discussion was that people are even complaining about the cost of iPhone games at all in the first place. I think £2.99, let's just take that as a reasonably kind of average sort of price for iPhone games. That is not expensive for 4 to 5 hours worth of time. But it's all about genre, because if you get a game that you're able to finish, you finish it in, say, 2 or 3 hours, and it costs you £2.99, That to me is money well spent. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I've finished it. I've spent my money, and I've got some closure on that little piece of consumer enjoyment there. I've actually consumed it, and I've done it. I've done that game. But
yeah,
there are others that will come out and say, "Oh, $2.99, and it's only 3 hours long. What's the deal with that?" But the same people would spend $2.99 on an open-ended game, like a puzzle game, where there isn't a clear end goal objective. And they'd maybe play it for the same amount of time, but because there isn't that end goal objective, because they don't get that totality of actually finishing the game, there is a they perceive that it's got value that hasn't been exhausted yet, if you see what I mean. And so same complaints aren't levelled at those genres.
And I think that's true.
It's interesting, but...
It's interesting if you have that the media matrix or entertainment matrix, then if you come in, because you say $2.99 is too much for 3 hours or whatever, and then you pay for a movie, renting film these days, like £3 or £4, isn't it? And then, you know, it's like £20 to go to the cinema. It is down here anyway. I mean, I'm sure, you know, up in Scotland it's probably, you know, gross, but here it's about... I went to Leicester Square today, it was about like £18. I thought that's like two tickets, that's just one. Ridiculous.
Well, seriously, for one ticket, £18?
Yeah, no, that's less that square. That's stupid.
Incredible.
That is outrageous, yeah.
I would vomit.
Fortunately, I did.
Did you get your own, bellhop?
The week after, I did get invited to the premiere, world premiere of Night at the Museum 2, so I didn't have to pay for that, so I'll drop in there.
Very good.
So next to Ben Stiller, a very small man.
Well, I'm going to... You know what I'm doing? I'll tell you what's just happened in my head. I thought... I really want to talk about the Star Trek film, but I need an in. But just yesterday, the mobile review of Star Trek went out, and actually last week the iPhone Star Trek game came out, and they're both quite good.
Yeah.
What did we give?
Eight for both.
Okay.
So it's a kind of top down like 1942, but with the Enterprise.
Okay.
It's good fun. Yeah, I dig it as well. It's good. The iPhone version. It's a good game.
Yeah, Tracy reviewed it. He's alive. Jim is our. Is that, that's quite funny.
Was it not Spanner that reviewed it?
Oh, Spanner. Sorry, no, it's Spanner. 7 out of 10. He said so.
Spanner did mobile.
I'm reading the site now. 7 out of 10 for iPhone.
Yeah.
It's the top-down action of Star Trek will draw you in like a tractor beam, although mainly of the name and not by virtue of its classic shump gameplay. That's shoot 'em up, I think.
Yeah.
But there you go. Yeah, but you know, it looks quite nice. Have anybody played it? I haven't played it yet. Have you played it? Having seen the film, Rob? You've not.
I haven't played it yet, but I might do because I quite like those games. But yeah, I just wanted to say about the film, I suppose, while we're on the subject. I'll just say about the film. I thought it wasn't as good as everyone's saying. I thought it was actually quite disappointing. But I'll say this in its defence. I thought the casting of Jim Kirk was perfect.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then some of the other casting decisions were pretty good. The guy who played Spock's good. The guy who plays the Doctor, whatever he's called, Bones, he's brilliant. He's like a lookalike. And I thought he was Russian because he's in The Bourne Identity too.
Have we had this discussion already, Rob? Because I'm getting massive deja vu.
We talked about it at the pub the other night.
We did, right. Sorry.
We were arguing about how he's expensive.
Yeah, no, I just thought, maybe something, some time-travelling thing where, like, something... An older Rob come back from the future.
I really enjoyed it. I almost think that maybe that's why I'm enjoying the mobile game so much, because I'm sort of swept up in the Star Trek hype.
Yeah,
I got swept up in it, and the sweeping took me to the cinema, and I walked away from the cinema shaking my head sadly. I thought I'd been misled because I think it's not true that it will appeal to non-Star Trek fans. I think I'm the proof of that. I think it's, if you're a Star Trek fan, you will really enjoy it. And if you've got any kind of sci-fi leanings, but if you're not a Star Trek fan at all, it's a bit too much. Like the whole, I'll get off the subject really quickly, but the whole kind of, the idea of Jim Kirk being this kind of like criminal who the captain of the ship is in a pub with, even that seems unlikely, but the captain of the ship nevertheless is in a pub with him, and then purely based on the fact that he inherited 50% of his genes from a former Star Trek captain who was only a captain for about 5 seconds because someone else, and then saying to him, right, well, you kind of come and train with us and you can be an officer, and you know, making, I thought it's just so improbable and so stupid and corny that it, you know, I don't, there's, I'm not invested enough in what's happening for me to buy this. It's just too stupid. And things like that kept happening throughout the film. And I thought, no, sorry, I have to be a dissenting voice.
God. If you put it like that.
I haven't seen it before, but you've kind of taken a bit of the edge off it for me now. Having
described, I've done you a favour. No,
don't listen to him, Chris. It's brilliant.
I think if I'd not expected it to be as good as I expected it to be, then I would have enjoyed it more. But I was expecting to be blown away, and I wasn't.
Fair enough.
So, yeah. So dragging
it back from what we've been to the cinema to see, Fraser, sorry, we've moved on from that.
Okay.
You want to tell us about but you're tough. You've heard a Herzog, you know, obscure German art house. We've missed it, I'm afraid. But what else? So Star Trek's reviewed on the site this week. What else has been going on the site this week?
Well, every review.
I think it's good to talk about as we on the site.
Digis Chocolate's Stunt Car Racing 99 Tracks came out. It's quite a good one.
That's good.
They're just making recommendations now. The Crossroad Silver, pretty good. It's a puzzle game. So that one's worth checking out.
Sonic came out, didn't it? That's quite a big release.
That's almost kind of news. It came out and surprised everybody.
We should live with that, shouldn't we, really?
Yeah, maybe we should have mentioned that by now, yeah.
Yeah,
that'd be good. Sonic. We should have a little ding ding. We should have a little not ding ding. We should have a little sound effect from Sonic, a bang or something.
Only noises from that. It came out actually. This is a testament to the speed of our iPhone editors reviewing. On the site, if you look on that, you know, that day's page on the site, it's the news and then the review are directly next to each other. But the news surprised everyone. Most people publish their news about that game coming out after we published our review of it, which is pretty good.
It's because we're the number one site for iPhone games news and reviews, so it should hardly be surprising to us or anybody. Sonic, I mean, we were talking about earlier about big brands coming, you know, this is a Sega game and it's out from Sega and it's 7 out of 10. I think there's some issues that can. A few issues with controls, maybe. That seems to be what's coming through the comments.
Generally, but,
that's pretty big news. I think has anybody else played? I haven't. I'd be quiet for that actually. But something we should probably play some of these. Have you played this yet?
I haven't played it yet. No, I did actually review the original iPod version of Sonic that came out, which didn't work really that well, just because using a click wheel wasn't the best. Control method for it at all, but I'm tempted to give this a shot, but I'm also a bit annoyed that they didn't include maybe the first three Sonic games in one go for a quid more or something, you know. I mean, Sonic 1,
which was it?
It's the first Sonic game
how much did they charge for it?
Now you're going to put me on the spot.
We just had a discussion about how people bitch and moan about pricing $2.99.
I'm going to say
$2.99. I'm going to go for that as well. Right, okay. Sonic.
$3.49,
right, yeah. For $3.49, I want 1, 2, and 3. Because Sonic 1, good though it is, it's got a very dear place in my gaming heart. It's not nearly as good as Sonic 2 or Sonic 3. So no matter how good it is on iPhone, I'm still only going to play it thinking, I wish I was playing Sonic 2, or wish I was playing Sonic 3, even. So,
it's a big game for £3, though. If you ever think about when it came out on the Mega Drive, it would have been £30.
That's true,
And it takes a while to beat. It takes me a lifetime to beat because I lack the skills, but the people who do beat it, you know, it's not like you can just breeze through it. So I don't think that's too bad. On the mobile versions, which cost more, you know, they'd have been £5 each, and they were half of the game a time. So you buy half of each Sonic game for £5. So it's definitely a good value in comparison to the mobile versions.
Yeah,
which were great as well.
It's good. I'm glad that it's there, and I hope that further Sonic games will follow. But I'm going to wait for those, I think.
Yeah, fair enough.
What do you think? Sorry, go on.
Go on. No, go on.
I was jumping around. I saw this thing about Edgy Mocha, which I'm surprised you haven't talked about. Considering they're darlings of iPhone gaming, not undeservedly, I should say, but. This is, they've started revealing some details about Livefire, which everybody gets very excited about, FPS, and about how the whole commerce thing's going to work, how they're basically going to be able to buy bits and pieces inside the game using the new 3.0 kind of software. I just wonder, what do we think about that? And they're talking about, what do you think about, first of all, FPSs on iPhone? Because I'm really sceptical about it, I don't think we discussed it last week, but I think it's a bit... I'm not sure about it, sure it's the right place.
My feeling is if anyone can pull it off, then it's probably going to be NG Moco. But having said that, I mean, it's not as if first-person games are completely unproven on the platform. That game, Space Trader Moon Madness, does have a pretty robust control scheme, and it really does move at a pretty decent rate and whatnot. But it doesn't involve shooting people in the face really fast and trying to run away from them. So not much is demanded of you in the control set.
What do you do in the game now?
It's like an intergalactic flea market that you take part in, basically. that's basically it. There's no, but it is getting an update soon that will include... I don't know about soon, I just made that up. But it is getting an update, apparently, that will include weaponry. So maybe this whole... part is just you saving money to buy the best guns. But that's the thing about Livefire. When this 3.0 firmware goes live and you can have microtransactions and whatnot, and that's a whole debate in and of itself. But there's the serious potential that NG Moco could create a system where certain players lose interest very quickly because they don't buy into the whole microtransactions thing. So if you've got players that are willing to buy better armor, willing to buy better guns, and hence be more successful in the game, and then another group of people who are like, no, I've just paid £3, I don't need to have to spend more money on this, especially seeing as up until this point, people have been enjoying free updates with these sorts of things.
Yeah.
I think that there's a serious potential, unless there's some very clever matchmaking system at work, that a lot of players will buy the game and not play it. They'll play it for the first 2 or 3 days, and then as soon as it becomes clear that they've got no hope against the people that are armed to the teeth because they're happy enough to spend the money on the upgrades, they'll drop off and not come back to it. So,
but do you not think that's the same situation with a lot of the online role-playing games that managed to get around? World of Warcraft, like people who, they've leveled up sufficiently and have got loads of... or bought gold or bought items or have just played it for hours and got up there... That manages to balance out some way. I know what you're saying, but I think like you say, you can separate out as long as you can match make a little bit and filter it out. But then I guess if you're not going to be uber powerful and be able to smite people quite easily, why bother spending cash on the armor in the first place?
Haven't NG Moco said that it's not going to give people an advantage? There's no competitive advantage to be gained from doing that, from kind of buying.
So it's like Halo's, upgrades. Like Halo 3's armor sort of thing, where it's all.
Yeah,
just...
I think so. I mean, I see, and this is very vague, but I seem to remember them saying somewhere that it's not going to be the case that people can use the real money to make them better at the game or to give themselves a bonus advantage in the game. You know, it's for something else, just for the way you look, your character.
Well, they're saying here it's more. They're saying that they're stressing aesthetics, side of it, but it does mention ability. It does mention certain armor being, heavier, stronger, whatever. So I mean, it could just be aesthetic. It could just be that whole character customization thing. That would kind of make a certain amount of sense. And it wouldn't affect the game. And maybe that's the way to go. Maybe it's the way they will go. I think they're still maybe teetering a bit on the edge. Maybe they have come out and said, you won't just be able to buy rocket launchers and blow everybody away. But it's an interesting space. I mean, because you look at those iMafia games and things like that, and that seems to be, you can buy packs and buy kind of fake money with real money. And there seems to be quite thriving businesses in the social gaming networks.
It's a bit of a quandary for the developers as well, though, because they've got to make their microtransactions seem worthwhile to the player. If the player is only buying them for the sake of having their little digital avatar look a little bit snazzier or have more threatening-looking armour, then that's a much harder sell for the developer than the player having increased abilities for the money that they're going to pay for these microtransactions. So on the one hand, they've got, you know, there's going to be people that want these and that want to be able to buy these extra abilities if that is what NG Moco is planning. But on the other hand, by doing that, that they do run the risk of alienating a large group of people that aren't into doing that and that don't agree with microtransactions. And I think the big problem here as well with the microtransactions thing is that basically through updates, people have been getting extra content in their games for free up until now.
Yeah.
So to now suddenly start charging for that, and it doesn't mean that updates won't exist. I'm sure that they still will, of course, and that people will still update their games. But it is going to create the situation where certain developers are going to be like, well, why am I going to release this thing that I've spent weeks working on for free as an add-on for my game when I could charge another 50 pence for it? Because people are going to pay it, you know, but, yeah.
That's fair enough, I think. I mean, we're saying it as if it's a complaint, but really, I don't know how it's come to this point where we now expect to get additional content for our games for absolutely nothing every few weeks.
Yeah,
it's funny thing. It's like when DVDs came out, and you always get bonus content on DVDs, and so you come to expect it. And now, if I buy a DVD and I put it in, and it's all it's got is like a chapter selection and maybe a commentary, I just think, what a rip-off! I can't believe they haven't fallen over themselves to give me lots of bonus content. But it's just, I suppose it's just because other people do it that you come to expect it. But really, I mean, I think it was fair enough if we had to start paying for extra content. It's been nice the way it's been now, where we get this extra content for free, but it's too good to be true, I think.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, I would never have expected to get something like the GTA, The Lost and the Damned for free. Never. It's just, and I mean, obviously the iPhone updates that we get, although some of them are very robust and contain a lot of extra stuff. For example, Rolando, I don't know how many extra levels have been added to that with all the updates that it's had, but it's plenty. I think it's more than 20 extra secret levels, I think, that it's received for free since it first came out. And I think the situation is that they've gone one way, and to then go the other way might potentially annoy a lot of people.
It's
different with something like Xbox Live or with a MMORPG where people get into it at the outset expecting to have to pay for extra content. With the iPhone at the moment, it's certainly not being touted as a major selling feature, but the people that are into the games and the people that follow the iPhone gaming scene recognise that as one of the key benefits of iPhone games, especially as far as repairing games. I mean, of course, the developers will never charge for that with microtransactions, but yeah, there's the content.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk about what we've been playing. I'll start. Because it's related. What I'm talking about is related to what we were talking about before. I downloaded Crawl and played that. And, it's crap. It's not very good. It's rubbish. I can see why we gave it a high score when we did, because it came at a time when we didn't know what to expect from iPhone. We were still kind of calibrating our expectations. And it looks amazing, and it still looks amazing, actually. Like, really much more kind of crisp and everything than most other iPhone games I've played. But the gameplay, it's just kind of not there. You just sort of run along a bit.
Yeah.
And then just hack at people, but there's no kind of attack. You can't dodge, you can't block. You basically just run along, stab at the button, either of the two kind of buttons that appear on the side, for a while until everybody dies, and then move on. So I don't know whether either of you have played Crawl and what you're...
I played Crawl, and I played it a lot when it came out, and when you say a lot, you can finish it quite rapidly. I mean, I think the guys that made Digital Legends, very good developer, made some great games to engage in, and got some really interesting stuff on the way on various platforms. But yeah, I think it feels very much like it was a tech demo, and it literally was one of the very, very first games that came out on the App Store. And it was one of the things Apple showed around to show what you could achieve, and everybody got behind it. We got behind it. Everybody who's in this space got behind it. But, you know, the expansion since then of the industry, it's almost like could be like 2 years or 3 years of console expansion, everything that reached mobile. And so the expectations and the quality generally, certainly for gameplay, is it's the evolution's been astonishing. I think, yeah, that it does look, it does feel very dated. Last year,
yeah, already.
Last June, it does feel very dated as a game. I think even then it was a bit limited, but it looks good still. And it's sort of game to show your mates. I'm talking about your game, sorry, but it's sort of game to show your mates. I think it's brilliant. You just go, wow, look at, you know, that's the sort of thing that can make people in a pub look at it, you know, and then they play and go, oh, this is, there's not an awful lot to this, is there?
Yeah, it's definitely true. I mean, it's got nice things. There are nice things about it, but yeah, I think the games that I played on my iPod Touch, since the time I've had it, have all been the good ones, basically, because I've read the reviews and I've only downloaded really good stuff. So yeah, it's like that thing where you come across something mediocre when you've been playing great things and they seem rubbish. It's like when you buy a book just off a shelf in a bookshop that you've never heard of the author of the book, thinking, oh, it'll be fine, yeah, I'll be adventurous. And then invariably when you do that, they're crap. Because, and it's not because they're crap necessarily, it's obviously much better than you could do, but it's because most of us have just only ever read really, really good books. The famous books that they're concerned of.
I think you did a good explanation of why some things are good and other things are bad there. That's
and I did it.
That's a life lesson. You've just changed my life.
so concise, Mr. Hearn. What else have you been playing?
It wasn't. It was relative. I was comparing. It was insightful. It was deep. You just lack the insight to see it. What else? Not much this week. What's that game? You were talking about it the other day, Chris. The one where you have bubbles and you hold your finger down the button and the bubbles grow.
Oh,
Filling. Filling. I've been playing that and I like it. It's good. It's it's a real kind of like an independent, casual title, like kind of web games that you find on J.E.'s Games. It's that kind of thing. It's really simple and kind of perfect.
What level are you at?
Of, I don't know, about 30 or something.
I'm 41 when I had a pause. 800,000. Sorry, no, it's not a challenge, obviously, you know.
No, I don't. I told you, I said this last week, I don't compete. I don't even step
into it. It's good because you're lost, so it's just as well you don't, really, I think. That's
Oh, that's right. Okay. So, yeah, playing that as well. How about
It's cool just filling, I like it. It's good. It's a really smart little, very basic, yeah. But again, I think the iPhone does that sort of game well, doesn't it? I mean, there's a lot of games like that are just well-made games. It doesn't have to be 3D graphics and some amazing concepts.
With your iPhone, and this is for both of you, does your accelerometer stop working ever? Because with my
really.
iPod Touch, all the time, it's like 50% of the time when I pick up to play like Rolando or Just Feeling, or something like that. Anything that basically uses the accelerometer, it won't be working, and so I have to like reset it and fiddle around with it for ages, and eventually, so I get it working. But that's an iPod Touch, and it's
I use an iPod Touch.
Designed to do that. I think that's a flaw. You might want to take that back to the store.
Yeah, sounds like it to me. I mean, I use an iPod Touch as well rather than an iPhone for gaming, and never have a problem with it. As far as the accelerometer goes, so.
Damn. Okay. Right. Yeah. I need to stick it back. I looked on the internet a bit about it, and it seemed to be kind of a common problem. And I thought, is this just something about iPod touches? But obviously not. Okay.
Well, you know, maybe we should stick something. Actually, there's something else for reader interaction. Anybody else is having that problem? I mean, I think it'd be a good thing to throw up that sort of thing on the site, ask a question, and see if or forum at least, and see if we can. If we can get enough ground swell, then maybe we've got a story there. Maybe there is something. Maybe there is an issue with accelerometer. And Paul, watch yourself. We're going for you.
Yeah,
we're whistleblowers. So, talking about simple games, are you finished your... You said you haven't played much. So I assumed you'd finished, Bob. Is that correct?
I finished.
You had. Talking about simple games that will look simple, at least. This week, I've been mainly playing Stick Wars, which is a bit odd. It's been in the charts for quite a while, which is what led me to look at it. It's number two at the moment in the chart I'm looking at anyway. You think it's a kind of tower defense game, and you've basically got, the screen's quite simple, it's got like a fortress wall. What's that?
I heard about this, when that game, that cel-shaded game that's coming out, that's a tower defense game, it was like a sort of precursor to that apparently.
Could be, I don't know. If you could interrupt me, you've got to say something better than that.
Yeah, sorry. I was thinking aloud. Sorry, go on.
You're inviting sarcasm.
I've been like, yeah. Will you let me finish? I've been like Ben off The Apprentice. You've got five. sorry, will you let me finish? No, so basically.
Where is his accent from?
It's terrible. I don't know where it's supposed to be. It's a tower. There's not a tower, there's a fortress. And then on one side is your bit, and then there's people marauding, and they're just little stick figures, like in that old, in those animations. What's, I don't know what it's called. There's stick figure animation people, the little swords and spears and stuff, and they run against it. But rather than you kind of building defences, you actually got to do it all yourself. So it starts off with you having to flip them from the air with your finger. You literally grab hold of them with your finger and whip them up in the air, or smash them against the ground until they you know, burst. And then as it goes on, you get to capture some, and you can send some of them out to attack, and you can get bombs, and you can do, and the things that come and get you get harder and harder, and you can build up your fortress and make it stronger. It's quite a strange little game. I don't think I've ever played anything quite like it. It looks really thrown together and a little bit poor. And when you first start playing, thinking, what is this? It's a bit like our podcast in many respects. But then, you know, you get really kind of addicted to it, and that you can't stop playing. I can kind of see why it's so high up at the chart. So I think definitely want to get that one. And when I've not been playing that, what I was going to do this week was to do a little roundup of something themed, which is something we're talking about doing, which isn't quite going to end. But I was looking at flying games, or flying shoot-em-up games, and I downloaded a few. I had a quick go to Siberian Strike and Eye Fight, which is both quite good. Didn't play them for very long because it's a bit 1942 and wasn't that excited. Maybe I'll play a bit more for next week. But Top Gun, has anybody else played Top Gun yet?
No, is that any good?
How good is that? Maybe it's just my age, I don't know. But it's beautiful graphics. You control the control your F something 2014, what the right. F-18, whatever, right?
John Jordan would know. In,
Fraser. I'll say it four times, so make me look clever. But you control your fighter, and you move the about the screen by tilting and dipping the iPhone, so using accelerometer. And you basically have to kind of avoid missiles and canyons and other things, and then get locks on. And it's really simple to play, really easy to get into. And it's got elements which remind me a little bit of that Star Wars game where you had to go down the trenches.
The Star Wars arcade game.
Some elements a bit like that. But it's really well done. The graphics are really cool. There's a bit of variation. I've only played through about sort of 7 or 8 levels so far, but I'm really loving it. And they've got the Top Gun license. It's a proper game, proper Top Gun license. So they've got the music.
Oh, that's awesome.
And you're kind of interacting with, like, and one, you're, you know, you're interacting with the known names like the Iceman and Maverick, and they're all kind of in there.
Does it have the thinly veiled homoeroticism, though?
Is that crotch hoisting?
Not as yet. They've not, maybe that's a bonus level I haven't got to. There's not been any, you know, it's been very USA. But I'm actually, you know, I was very sceptical of it when I downloaded it. And then I just think it's really great. It just really shows it off, the iPhone, the experiment really well. The graphics are great. And I don't know, have we reviewed it? I didn't check to see what we've reviewed
yeah,
it yet.
Yeah, we have. Here, I'll look it up now.
Oh, the pressure's on. It has to get a good score now.
Yeah, I have that.
It's 8 out of 10. It's good. So check out
F-14 as well. There you go. He even tells us the plane. We knew he would.
Yeah.
We knew he'd come through.
It's F-22. F-14, so yeah. So that's the two main. Apart from that, the only thing I touched on, which I'm definitely going to talk about next week, so we'll get a bit better, is Ping Pong, which is also, I think, in charts, World Cup Ping Pong, which I haven't played enough yet to say it instinctively feels relatively good, but I think these sort of sports games, you've got to play a bit to find out if it actually really works in it. Yeah.
What is it? Is it that table tennis game, that Shadow
Table tennis game, yeah. Table tennis game where you move the back of your finger and you can add spin and stuff. It seems, I played it for about half an hour before this. Not half an hour, about 5 minutes. I say half an hour. I literally played like two games, and it was. It seemed to work quite well, but I haven't had a chance to explore it enough yet to really speak authoritatively about it. So for me, Stick Wars and Top Gun, both really cool. There's something else I played which I don't really get, but I'm going to save that for next week because it's one of those things you can talk about forever. So that's me finished. Fraser.
Yes, me. As we talked about earlier, I've been playing Star Trek, which is very good. If a little unoriginal, but good fun and well presented. Been enjoying that. I've taken your guys' collective advice from last week and got Peggle, which I've been enjoying immensely. I love the sort of quirky, off-kilter presentation and the fact that there's a talking unicorn with a purple mane hosting the game. That's brilliant. Sorry?
He's really there then. God.
Yeah.
I thought it was the LSD.
I almost couldn't believe it the first time I saw it as well, because I expected it to just be another one of these almost quite dryly presented browser casual games that's just been ported straight across. But they've done a lot with it, they really have, and it's brilliant, it's really good fun. Like you were saying last week, Rob, there isn't an awful lot of skill past a certain point, because it's just impossible for the human brain to calculate all that complex geometry of this little bouncing ball. But it's still immensely satisfying.
I have to. Have you finished it yet?
No, I haven't actually. I've not played it that much. I've only played maybe the first kind of 10 or so stages, but I've really enjoyed it.
Come back when you finish the game and you're doing the master challenges and tell me that you haven't attained some sort of skill by
then. Oh, no, there is. There's definitely...
It's just a matter of time. If you throw enough... excrement at a wall, eventually some of it will stick, and you've just thrown enough of your excrement in the form of your time at Peggle that you've broken through. But I think there's an element of skill.
Definitely. But, I mean, even in the earlier levels, you do need to, like, you can't just go throwing away your balls. we're going to keep plowing this furrow of barely concealed innuendo.
You said plow.
You said
thorough. where else can I go with this? Let's move on from Peggle. It's too sexy. I've also been playing Uniwar, is a game that we took a long time to review simply because it just sort of kept getting pushed back because other high-profile things just kind of kept arriving. And I reviewed it and enjoyed it a lot. And I'm not a fan at all of turn-based strategy games, I have to confess. But this one's pretty good. The battle is good fun. I think the presentation's a bit dry. If you're going to make a game that's basically about blowing things up, then you need to at least pretend you're enjoying it rather than making it sterile and a bit sort of uneventful. But it's almost sort of like the turn-based war equivalent of chess. There's not really an awful lot. It's not got the sort of panache that something like Advance Wars has. But the really, really awesome thing about it is the online mode, because you can actually... Chess is actually quite a good comparison. The way, you know, some people have got corresponding boards set up in different parts of the world and they phone in their moves every now and then when they've taken weeks to think about it. And you can actually do that with this as well and set like a limit of maybe a day or a week for the next person in the game to take their turn. So it's quite cool like that. But you can also do it if you actually do find people who are online at the same time as you can have a near real-time turn-based battle with them as well. So it's really good. And there's loads of cool profile options, and, you know, you can build a friends list, and you can have, like, a little pool of loads of different games all running at once. So, you know, theoretically, you could, if you wanted to have, say, 10, 15 games running all at once, then you could spend a good, solid half an hour, 45 minutes every day making your one move in each of those matches. Against various different opponents all over the planet. So the online mode is brilliant. Really, really cool. Really, really well implemented and totally seamless and no messing about. So that's really good. And it's apparently become a bit of a cult favourite amongst turn-based strategy fans. So a lot of the people that already like it probably aren't going to like my review because I talk about how it's a bit dry. But still got an 8 out of 10 on the site and it's good. So... if you're into that, I'd recommend it. But, you know, if you're not into turn-based strategy games, don't make that your first game you download after listening to this podcast. Get the Stick One instead. That's what I'm going to get.
Give me some Stick Wars.
Yeah, Stick Wars. That's it. Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, that's what I've been playing. That's me.
Cool. So we've done some news. We've done games we're playing. So I think the only thing is do we have like a mystery sound effect? But we don't, do we?
I do. Yeah. Well, it's not so much a mystery sound effect as it is a mystery song. But I think that it might be painfully obvious. But I think, given how ramshackled we've been today, we should just play it anyway and see how we
before
get on.
Before you play it, yeah. You know, we asked a question on the podcast last week. I bumbled around trying to find, and we got a correct answer from somebody. It was about the
That's
iPhone.
Correct. Well remembered, yeah. It was about the processor, how fast the iPhone's processor is, what its clock
is. The current iPhone processor is.
Yeah, in fact, we should just... the comment is right here. I'll just get the comment and read out. I believe the chap's name was Richard Brown.
Yeah.
We said, first of all, that we didn't know how fast the iPhone's current processor was, and the reason why we're talking about it is because there's been speculation about the next iPhone hardware revision having a slightly faster processor and whether or not that would create a two-tiered system on the App Store. And Richard Brown wrote back to say, the iPhone 3G's processor, brackets, a Samsung ARM 1176JZ brackets F-S version 1.0 close brackets, punishing detail there, runs at 620 MHz but is underclocked to 412 MHz. This is to prevent overheating, etc. Please may I have my prize now, PG? ... lol. Well, he's won me over with
I don't think he needs to read it in quite that detail. I think he was laughing out loud about the
a
prize. But I think Richard Brown, if we were given, we've decided what we're giving is little prizes. Anybody gets mentioned on podcast as a, not a game developer, that'd be weird, I just talk about games, but as a listener to the show who writes in, wins something, we'll give them a code for a game, and we'll mail it out to them, so you get a free iPhone game. Could be worth 59p, could be worth £1,000, more likely 59p. However, we just need your contact details. So Richard Brown, he came in the comments, if he could just drop us a mail at... To who? Fraser?
Yep, I'll do it. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. Send it to me.
Then we'll sort you out with that. That's great.
And so we get an email address over here.
Go on then.
That would be handy, wouldn't it? My email address is fraser@pocketgamer.co.uk.
We should probably have an iPhone podcast email address. Should we do that?
We shall, next week.
Should we call it podcast@pocketgamer.co.uk?
That's an idea. That makes sense.
We'll do that. By the time this goes out, we'll have that sorted.
The other thing to mention about that as well is if you are commenting with something that's directly related to the podcast, it's probably a good idea to create an account and sign in and then reply. Not that we discourage you from doing the other method, but it does make getting in touch with you much, much easier because it means that you've got a profile on our back end and whatnot, and we can get access to your email address and bank account details and other things that we can use
exactly,
for our own
illicit
purposes.
Sell,
so, okay, not really.
These iPhone games don't pay for themselves. Okay, so that's cool. So then, did we get a winner for the competition last week? We didn't.
I don't think anybody actually even wrote in to reply, sadly.
What was it? What was
the answer we were looking for was RoboCop on the Game Boy.
Oh. On the Game Boy, I like that.
That was also on the Spectrum. Because when Fraser played it last week, it rang a bell inside my brain. And it was the Spectrum version. So, well, obviously the Game Boy as well, but it was across lots of platforms. I just thought I'd add that, just in case anybody was going to write it. Carry on.
Cool. Fair enough. And what you can do with it. So it's a rollover then this week.
Yeah, it's a rollover. There was no prize announced last week, so depending on what that was, it's potentially twice as big. This week.
I'm sticking the iPhone game. To be honest.
Right. Okay.
It's the easiest way of doing this.
Yeah. Two iPhone games then.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, go for it.
So this is a homage by one electronic artist about a very famous gaming character. It's probably a little bit easy, but this is early days in the podcast, so here we go. Okay, Do you want that again?
Should you play it again?
I'll play it one more time. Okay. If you could name either which game character that's about, or which game, or the artist and the name of the song, you will be rewarded with an iPhone game. Or, in fact, two iPhone games, because it's a rollover week.
I'm just speechless.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
You don't know what it is? All right, maybe it's harder than I thought. All right.
Sounds vaguely Russian.
It's not Russian. No, it's not. That's a clue. Okay. It's not Russian. It could be from anywhere in the world except Russia.
Yeah, I think I know what it is, actually. But it was played by a balloon, you said.
Huh?
No, that's what it sounded like. It's like saying a balloon animal. But no, obviously not. Russia.
I'm totally lost.
We're falling apart now.
We are. The wheels have come off.
We're losing our dignity and falling apart.
Okay.
Okay.
So, well, on that note...
So that I think that lasted about an hour and a half. So, yeah, we'd better go. Please do, everybody who's listening, please do add negatively or positively to the comments about the podcast. And you never know, maybe next week we'll be reading out your thoughts at the beginning like we did today. Also, go on to iTunes and give us a rating, obviously 5 stars. Befitting the quality of the podcast you've just listened to. And you can read our writings on pocketgamer.co.uk. Anything else from anybody?
No.
Are we ghost? Okay. At the end of the one-up podcast, the guy hosting it says, "We are ghost," and then it ends. Should we do that?
No.
No. Well, if any readers can come up with a better catchphrase for us to use next
week.
We're
not saying that.
We did. We were better because we sounded like ghosts for about a third of the podcast.
We did.
We are ghosts.
Yeah, it's just actually a statement of a fact rather than than a saying.
Let's end this.
Yeah, let's.
let's end this.
I wish I was a ghost at this point.